Hello, this is your speech instructor, Jeff Prisbillo, and this audio file is designed to help you understand how to create an introduction and a conclusion for not just your informative speech, but the persuasive speech that will be coming up later in the semester. The first thing I'd like to tell you is that if you haven't already, you should stop this recording and print the sample outlines that I have posted for you on Blackboard. Once you've printed them all, you should study them. That'll come in real handy, and you should have them in front of you as you listen to this audio recording. One thing that's really important that you do not do is do not read Chapter 10. Chapter 10 is on outlining, and it's a little bit confusing, and I'd much rather you avoid looking at that to avoid any confusion. Anyways, let's begin with introductions. And introductions have five parts. They have an attention getter, a central idea, credibility statements, goodwill statements, and a preview statement. And we'll spend a little time with each of those things, but first I want to talk a little bit about what the overall purpose of an introduction is. Now, if I were to ask you, what is the purpose of an introduction? You'd probably look at these outlines and say things like gain attention, establish your central idea. But the true answer to that question is to persuade. Even though at this point in the semester you're doing an informative speech, the purpose of your introduction is to persuade. You know, just because people are sitting in the chairs and you're talking to them, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to listen. Each and every one of you has sat in a class and probably zoned out for a half hour or longer, not listening to the professor is saying. What a good public speaker does, before they get into the meat or the bulk of what they're going to be talking about, they spend some time persuading the audience to come along with them on the journey through this information. If you don't convince the audience to listen, they are not going to. Now, the introductions that we're doing for the informative speech have five parts to them, and those parts should be followed in order to persuade your audience to listen to what you have to say about this topic. Now, in the future, when you do speeches outside of this class, you know, you might not have to do these steps in this order, but these things should always exist. So whether you're doing them overtly, like we are doing in this speech, or just making sure they kind of hang in the background and they're less overt, a little more hidden, you know, it doesn't really matter, but that persuasion must always exist. So the first thing you have to do is get people's attention. Now, if you were to turn in your textbook to pages 228 to 236, they'll talk about some specific ways to get attention. One of the stereotypical things that people say about starting a speech is tell a joke. You know, I bet you've all heard of somebody who can't figure out how to start their speech, and someone gives a piece of advice that says, hey, why don't you start by telling a joke? Now, a joke is not always a good idea. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. You know, if you were giving a eulogy, a joke might not be the best idea in the world. But a joke has good concepts behind it. So while I don't necessarily think you should start every presentation with a joke, you should start every presentation that does things similar to the way a joke might. What I mean by this is when you tell a joke, you get people to laugh. And when you get people to laugh, they're doing something they enjoy, and they are actually participating. They're giving back a piece of feedback, which gets the audience involved right away. So what you want to do is persuade the audience that you're going to be a great speaker, and you are going to involve them as an audience, and you're not going to avoid them and kind of talk at them. So telling a joke gets the audience involved. It also establishes the tone that you're going to be engaging in. So everyone wants to know that you're going to be an interesting and creative person. So your attention getter should strive to do those things. Get the audience involved somewhere, somehow, even if it's just raising your hand. And also, you know, let them know that you're going to be interesting and creative. Now, if you go to pages 228 to 236 of your textbook, they give you some specifics, things like asking a question. Now, there are two kinds of questions. There's hypothetical questions or rhetorical questions that you don't really expect anyone to answer, but you just kind of ask them and makes people think. And then there's literal questions, and I like literal questions to start with. You know, throwing a question out and asking people to raise their hand. Like, how many of you have ever been to Italy? And people raise their hand. How many of you would like to go to Italy? And people raise their hand. Maybe even you ask a literal question where you ask people a question, then you ask them to raise their hand with an answer. You know, if you can get the audience involved right in the beginning, whether it's getting getting them to talk or getting them to raise their hand or do some sort of exercise or getting them to laugh. You're telling them right from the beginning, I'm going to be creative and I want you to come with me. Your textbook also talks about telling a story, like a narrative of some kind. Could be a hypothetical story, could be a personal story, could be a real story. Starting with facts or figures is another great way to begin a presentation. Your textbook also talks about PowerPoint a little bit, you know, possibly showing some pictures on PowerPoint that, you know, might gain some interest, and people always like to look at photographs of things. You might want to do some sort of interesting action. Your textbook talks a little bit about this, but, you know, I've had examples of people in my class who have done a speech on square dancing, and they actually brought in three people and they did a little square dance as their attention getter, acting out little scenes. I had one student who was going to be demonstrating the Heimlich maneuver, and right when I called his name, he pretended he was choking, and someone in the class saved him, and that was his attention-getting device. So get creative, but remember, overall, what you're trying to do is communicate to the people in the audience that I am a creative person, I am going to be interesting, and I am going to work hard to bring this information to you. Whatever method you use, you know, make sure that it does that. Now, if you have writer's block and you really can't come up with an attention getter, one of the best places to find an attention getter is the first paragraph of any book, newspaper article, magazine article, even, you know, some of the stuff you might find on the internet. Speech writers aren't the only people that use attention getters. Writers use them too. So you can borrow the ideas straight from these other writers. And if you want to use them word for word, all you got to do is cite it. So that's pretty much how to gain attention. The first step of your outline is to put your attention getter on there. Please, on your outlines, don't write your attention getter out word for word. Just give me a couple of words on what you put, like the idea behind what you're going to say. I'll hear it when I see the speech. I just want to see the gist of it. So it should only be a couple of words on your outline. If you're looking at those sample outlines, you'll notice that the next thing is central idea, and you've all written your central idea for your topic proposal. So all you're going to do is transfer it here onto the outline. Now, if your topic has changed or your approach to the topic has changed, of course your central idea is going to change from the topic proposal. When you look at your central idea, when someone else looks at it, that person ought to be able to tell two things from it. It ought to tell us what your culture is and what your topic is. The central idea should be one clear sentence that flows right out of the attention getter and basically reveals your topic. And page 236 of your textbook talks about the revealing of the topic. Now, I talked earlier about, you know, sometimes you have to do these things overtly. Some of them, they're a little less overt. You know, it should always be, for example, an attention-getting device of some kind. In fact, on Tuesday of this week, I have to go do a presentation to some board members here at school. And I know what I need to tell them, but I was trying to think of some attention-getting device to kind of jump into the topic. So, you know, whether you're doing a speech for class or talking to the Board of Education, an attention-getter is an important thing to have. It persuades your audience, like the central idea does. The central idea basically says to your audience, right up front, I'm going to be clear. I am going to help you with this, and I'm going to guide you through what I'm talking about. And people are more likely to pay attention to a speaker if they know that speaker is going to help them with all of the information. So put your central idea on there word for word. The third step in the beginning of any speech is to establish your credibility. Now, credibility also falls on two levels. There's expressed credibility, and then there's that kind of credibility that's not expressed, that kind of exists. Your credibility is the trust that your audience has in you. It's discussed on page 237 of your textbook. And basically, what you want is your audience to believe in you. You want your audience to know that you are an expert. Now, on the first day of class, I walked into the classroom, and you all assumed that because I was hired by Harper College, I knew what I was doing and I was credible on my subject, so I didn't really need to establish my credibility. But I went ahead and told you, you know, how long I've been doing this, and I told you about how I established the online speaking course and I coached the speech team, and all those things are kind of overt things by telling them to you. I established my credibility. No one wants to listen to a speaker who is not an expert on their topic. So when you look at those outlines, you'll notice that most of them have two credibility steps. I want you to tell us the two reasons why you are an expert on this topic. One of them is basically telling us it's part of your culture, so that should be, you know, pretty easy. And then come up with another reason why you are an expert on this topic. Let me give you a good example. If this were a National Breast Cancer Awareness Week, and if we had the comedian Dane Cook come to college to speak for National Breast Cancer Awareness Week, we would think that's kind of strange. You know, why is this comedian talking about breast cancer? If this were National Comedy Week, you know, it would be no big deal. So if it's National Comedy Week, he kind of has this possessed credibility. He has it already. But if it's National Breast Cancer Awareness Week, he would have to establish his credibility, be more overt about it. And that's what I'm asking you to do on your speech. So let's say, you know, it's Breast Cancer Awareness Week, the comedian Dane Cook is here. He might step up to the podium and say, I know what you're all thinking. What am I doing here? But I want you to know something really interesting that most people don't know about me, and that is that my mother, my sister, and my girlfriend are all breast cancer survivors, and I was at their side the entire time they fought and conquered this disease. So today I am here to tell you about the role that males play in helping females beat breast cancer. And therefore, he's established his credibility. He has told his audience why he's an expert on the topic. Now, it is persuasive in the end. You know, an audience is not going to listen to someone who they don't believe is an expert. So by telling them you're an expert, you're persuading them to listen to you. Quite often, people know who you are, and you don't have to overtly describe your credibility. Sometimes someone who introduces you gives you credibility. You know, they might say, you know, coming to the stage is world-renowned public speaker Jeff Prisbillo, and he's going to talk to you about establishing credibility. Let's hear it for him. You know, but somebody else has established it for you. So whenever you give a speech, you want to ask yourself, does this audience know who I am? And do they know why I'm an expert on this topic? And if the answer is yes, they know who you are, then you skip this part. But if they don't know who you are, then you go about establishing your credibility. Tell them why you are an expert. The fourth step of writing the introduction is where students in my speech classes typically get confused. And I think it's because of the wording that Stephen Lucas uses in your textbook. It's called establishing goodwill. It is establishing that you come to the public speaking situation with goodwill, with good intentions. You do this in two ways, by justifying the topic and relating the topic to the audience. Now, on your outlines, I put 1, 2, 3. I want you to come up with three statements that justify the topic or relate it to the audience. When I say justify the topic, I mean you come out and tell us why this topic is important. Again, that's persuasive. You know, an audience isn't going to listen to you talk about something if they don't believe that it's important. A lot of times we bring in statistics here. So if you're going to give a speech about breast cancer, you might want to tell us how many women each year get breast cancer, and that establishes the importance of the topic. Let's say you were giving a speech about breast cancer to men. You know, you would have to justify that topic to them. And one of the things you might be able to tell them is give them a source that says 2% of breast cancers are in men. And that might make a lot of men sit up and take notice, where before they might not want to listen to the speech, but now they have a reason to. So justify the topic and then relate it to the audience. Tell the audience how your topic might come into their life someday. Because again, it's persuasive. If people don't believe that your topic is important to them and is going to come into their life, they are less likely to listen to you. So I want you to come up with three goodwill statements, two that justify and one that relate to the audience, or vice versa. Two that relate to the audience and one that justifies. And then the final step of your introduction is your preview statement. Preview statements are discussed on pages 238 to 240 of your textbook. The preview statement you've already written, but again, if you've made any changes to your speech or you've changed your main points from your proposal, you need to change it for your outline. This is basically the final draft of it that I'm looking at. Go ahead and write your preview statement out word for word. The preview statement is persuasive in the same way that the central idea is persuasive, in that it tells your audience, I'm going to be clear, I'm going to help you through this speech. So you have a choice when starting a speech. You know, you got to look at the audience and decipher, you know, what you need to do to them. If you want to lose your audience, Don't do an attention getter and be uninteresting. Don't be clear. Don't establish your credibility. Don't justify the topic or relate it to their lives. And again, don't preview your message. And you'll lose your audience if you do that. But if you want to be a great public speaker, always in the beginning of every message, whether it's a formal speech like the one you're doing in class or a speech at your church or a community group, you should always persuade the audience. Show them that you're going to be interesting. Establish a central idea so you're clear. Prove to them you're a credible source. Prove to them that this topic is important and will somehow come into their life. And then preview how you're going to be treating this speech, where you're going to be going with the topic. If you do those things, you are so likely to have your audience come with you on the journey of the speech. So that's the attention getter. The introduction. The next thing I want to talk about is your conclusion. Now, conclusions are a bit more simple. They only have three steps, and they are explained on pages 242 to 244 of your textbook. And as I was looking at the textbook tonight, I find that section a little confusing. So if you just use the sample outlines that I've provided for you on Blackboard as a guide, you'll get through this. Basically, the conclusion has three parts, and the conclusion really has one purpose: to summarize what everybody has heard. In public speaking, in your textbook they talk about this too. We tell people what we're going to tell them, we tell them, and then we tell them what we told them. So our introduction tells them what you're going to tell them, the body tells them, and now your conclusion reviews or tells them what you've told them. So the first step is a summary statement. You'll notice if you look at the different outlines that the summary statement looks similar to the preview statement. It's just a retelling of what your main points were. It's your preview statement in the past tense. So start with a summary statement. You want to signal the end first by saying in conclusion or in retrospect or to review. Then you summarize your main points, just one sentence, a one sentence outline of your speech. And then the next step is to reinforce the central idea. You're basically telling people what you've learned from the speech. You set up a goal with your central idea in the beginning, and then you reinforce it in the end and tell people how you've achieved it. This is where you can use some sort of dramatic statement or final thought, or if you want people to walk away with one thing from the speech, what would you want them to walk away knowing? And just a little thought there. One, you could put two on your outline or one of them on your outline. It really doesn't matter. And then the final step of your conclusion is to refer back to your introduction, specifically the attention getter. Whatever it was you talked about in the attention getter, you should refer to again at the very end of the speech. What it does is it brings the speech around full circle. So what you started with is actually what you end with. So your conclusions are actually quite simple. They're a summary, just relisting of your main points, reinforcing the central idea, that's just like a final message or a final thought, and then somehow this quick reference back to what you talked about. If I haven't put them up already, I'm also going to put up some full drafts of speeches, so you can look at the conclusion, especially the refer back to the introduction, and see how other people have done it in their speeches. So to review, we've gone over introductions and conclusions. You also have some sample outlines that you've printed off. I think you're now ready to start writing your outline. Keep your outlines nice and simple. Everything on the samples that's in bold should also appear on your outlines, and then you put your information on there and you'll submit it into Blackboard. The sooner you get your outlines done, the sooner you can move on to the next steps and actually start putting the speech together. So I look forward to reading your outlines. If you have any questions, shoot me an email or give me a call. I hope that this audio was enjoyable and helpful, and we will see you in class. Bye-bye.